This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 12th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 277. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Global athletes Rob Kohler joins me to talk about the International Olympic Committee's latest appeasement of Russia. And when will athletes in Canada get a public inquiry into the toxic Canadian sports system? But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is it time for a judicial public inquiry into Canada's sports system? Hockey Canada is the tip of the iceberg. The Canadian Soccer Association's past and present leaders need to be put on the stand under oath. The latest? It's a Women's World Cup year, and they're cutting the national team's budget, months after the board of directors went to the Men's World Cup in Qatar and lived like kings and queens for a month. Captain Christine Sinclair tweeted, "Enough is enough," on February 10th. The team is on strike. Canadian Sports Hall of Famer and former National Women's Assistant Coach Andrea Neal went to Parliament Hill on February 2nd. She testified at the Status of Women Committee, which is studying abuse in Canadian sport. Neal added her voice to the campaign for a judicial public inquiry when she recounted her experience with the Canadian Soccer Association and the Vancouver Whitecaps in the wake of the Bob Berarda sexual assault scandal.
Even now, with Berarda's abusive behavior across 20 years of coaching established in a court of law, culminating in his guilty verdict and jail sentence, these victims are still waiting for a statement from Canada Soccer, still waiting for Canada Soccer to ban him from coaching. The Federation's response has been to insist their first failed investigation was thorough and extensive. To avert from rather than take responsibility, only pressure by the Olympic champion women's team forced a further inquiry, which resulted in the revealing, however incomplete, McLaren report. Players have had to join hands across generations to force the current management in our national federation to begin to do the right thing, to properly look into things. I wished I could say I was surprised by the office obfuscations and lack of accountability, but I had seen this sort of dodge before when my vantage point as an assistant coach in the national program made me aware of deeply concerning financial improprieties and organizational irregularities, which I helped to raise to no avail. Real leaders pay attention. They look and they listen. But when athletes or staff have flagged concerns for Canada Soccer, this has not happened. And in fact, they've been dismissed. Those brave enough to call on them to do better have not been protected. Some have suffered retributions. Others silenced and smothered by non-disclosure agreements and clauses in employment contracts. We have seen with Hockey Canada that a lack of safety and a lack of transparency around funding are not two distinct problems. They reflect leadership that has lost its moorings. These issues combine and intersect to impede the development of people who deserve to be striving and thriving through their sport.
Coming up next on the podcast, my interview with Rob Kohler of Global Athlete on what's wrong in Canadian and international sport and how it can be fixed. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. A year ago, the most controversial Winter Olympics were on in Beijing, just after Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping's historic summit. After the Games, Putin invaded Ukraine, and the world has not been the same since. Now, the International Olympic Committee is looking for ways to bring Russia and its ally Belarus back to the Games in time for summer 2024 in Paris. Meanwhile, Russia continues to attack Ukraine. My guest is Rob Kohler, Director General of Global Athlete, which advocates for fair, safe, and transparent sport for athletes.
Should athletes from Russia and Belarus be allowed back into the Olympics, even if they're competing without their flag and their without their national anthem?
Simple answer is no. I mean, the IOC, their moral compass needs a complete correction. We've seen time and time again that the IOC continuously favors Russia over any other stakeholder. I mean, we saw it leading into the 2016 Rio Olympic Games when it was uncovered that Russia was undermining the complete Olympic Charter by institutionalized doping. They never banned them. They attended Rio, they attended Pyeongchang, they attended Beijing, and they were simply rebranded as Olympic athletes of Russia. And now we see a brutal invasion, thousands of Ukrainian people and children and athletes being killed with this brutal war. And yet the IOC says we're going to let them back to the games in Paris, allow Russia and Belarus back. Not only are they letting them back, but the IOC sent a letter to the Ukrainian National Olympic Committee president, actually threatening if Ukraine boycotts the Olympic Games in Paris, if Russia attends, they're going to suspend Ukraine. If that is not out of touch, nothing is. And shame on the IOC for siding with Russia when they are committing crimes against humanity. They're invading a peaceful country, but yet they're going to let sport go as normal. Nothing is normal. And the facade of a neutral flag is just that. It's a facade. And arguably, as we've seen in the past, this neutral flag will probably draw more attention to Russia, as it did in previous games. So that's why we're making a hard stance with the Ukrainian athletes, and we are working in partnership with them to call on the International Olympic Committee and by extension the Paralympic Committee to ban both Russia and Belarus completely from the Paris 2024 games.
Has the IOC dealt properly with those athletes, the athletes that have become pawns of a political game?
You can't celebrate, separate state from sport. They are trained by the Russian government. They are supported by the Russian government. In fact, the president of the Russian Olympic Committee publicly stated that he welcomes and supports any Olympic athlete in the country to join the fight in the war in Ukraine. So right there, there's no separation, and there's an encouragement for athletes to actually have this aggression against Ukraine. Not only that, I mean, the IOC made this just ridiculous comment that the neutral athlete, if they come out publicly and don't support the war, then they would be allowed to go. What the IOC does with that, because in Russia, if you publicly do not support the law and the war, you end up in jail. So now the IOC is putting athletes in a position where they could be jailed in their own country. I mean, it's so out of touch with reality that the IOC continues to favor Russian interests. I'm not sure what the Russians have over the IOC or how much money they've given to the IOC, but something is not right here and something is off kilter. So, I mean, there's no way that Russia could ever be attending these games or Belarus until they withdraw from Ukraine. IOC tends to cherry pick human rights to benefit them. We saw they brought the games to Beijing, where there were crimes against humanity, where there were severe human rights abuses happening, and they ignored it the entire time and never addressed it once. But yet now they think human rights is an athlete has the right to compete. It's out of touch with reality. And the IOC, as I mentioned right from the start, their moral compass is broken. They favor rich states over athlete rights and athlete safety. And if they continue down this path, the fear is the Olympic movement and the celebration of the Olympics is going to crumble to the ground and never survive. And shame on the President Thomas Bach for bringing it into this position.
What are your thoughts on the Canadian Olympic Committee's stance on this? I mean, here we are in Canada, where Canada has been supporting Ukraine every step of the way in so many ways, governmentally through the military, to humanitarian aid and to non-governmental organizations helping out Ukrainians. And of course, there are sanctions to not deal with a long list, a list that gets longer every month or so of Russian entities and Russian people. Yet the Canadian Olympic Committee seems to be going along with what the IOC says.
Shame on the Canadian Olympic Committee. You know, all you have to do, you don't have to look very far, that the head of the Canadian Olympic Committee is also an IOC member. And knowing how the IOC works, you have to toe the party line or you will have consequences. We saw that with Richard Pound, who stood up against the IOC when they didn't ban Russia for institutionalized doping. And he found himself sidelined, removed from commissions, so retribution is real. But I'm sorry, if you're going to be a leader of sport in this country, you need to align with the values of this country. Just today, the Minister of Sport, Pascal Saint-Ange, came out publicly and said, the Canadian government supports Belarus and Russia being banned from Paris. 35 countries came out internationally with the same, that Russia and Belarus should be banned. And I know there are Canadian athletes that have already gone public and more coming that are going to call the Canadian Olympic Committee to task to stand up for human rights and to stand up that Russia and Belarus must be suspended and that the COC needs to take that position. If they don't, they also find themselves on the wrong side of history.
We're in the second month of 2023. 2022 was an unprecedented year of athletes across many sports rising up against abuse and corruption. The one that got the most attention was Hockey Canada. But athletes in bobsleigh and skeleton, gymnastics, rugby, soccer, track and field, water polo, and boxing were also speaking out, demanding change. Some got it, others didn't. The Status of Women Committee at the House of Commons has heard testimony from athletes, and there is consistent demand from them for a judicial public inquiry.
The demand for a judicial public inquiry. Why has it not been greenlit yet?
It's a very good question. I mean, we have thousands of athletes from 14 different sports that have come forward sharing their lived experience of abuse in their sports. Some have been publicly, some have been submitted privately. And the Canadian government continues to turn their back on these survivors. The fact that they don't want to have a judicial inquiry is concerning. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One is the Minister of Sport, Pascal Saint-Ange, has come out and admitted there is a crisis that happened in Canada. They've established this quasi-sport organization called OSIC, the Office of the Sport Integrity Commissioner, that falls under Sport Canada, which has proven, Sport Canada has proven, that they have no oversight, they provide no accountability to sport, and they simply aren't fit for purpose. Now they're overseeing another organization, OSIC, that is not fit for purpose, has no mandate, has no power to compel. And the fact that the Canadian government doesn't want to have a judicial inquiry to understand where the rot is, understand where the system has failed. We're not talking about an inquiry to listen to survivors and to let them share their stories. We want to understand where survivors have come forward and have been let down by the system and how the system has failed them. And until we do that, understand the crux of the system, understanding what role On the Podium plays, where the Canadian Olympic Committee fits, where Sport Canada fits, where the government fits, and where the national and provincial sport organizations fit in this whole system, ecosystem, and how they have either let down or ignored abuse. Until we understand that, we are never going to be able to approve the future of safe sport or a safer sport in Canada. Adam Van Coverden came out yesterday talking about participation and the importance of sport. Sport is going to start to die, and people aren't going to stop putting their kids into sport if we don't correct this problem. It's a systemic issue. It's not limited to one sport. And thousands of Canadian children, youth, and elite athletes are being affected by the lack of oversight and lack of accountability of sport. And until this judicial inquiry is held, I don't think we'll ever be in a safe space in Canada. And this is not to hurt Canada. This is to actually make Canada a leader globally. Abuse in sport is a global issue. It's a human rights issue. And we need to address it not only for Canadians, but to be leaders globally. And that's why we're pushing so hard for this inquiry to bring the truth to the surface and to protect athletes for the future. And until that's done, we are going to continue to see abuse happen across this country, untreated, and people still turning a blind eye to it.
The British Columbia government decided in October that it would not back the bid for the Winter Olympics to come back to Vancouver in 2030. The Canadian Olympic Committee and four host First Nations have quietly asked for help from the federal government, which has bigger issues, especially health care. The IOC has delayed its decision until 2024. I asked Rob Kohler, is now the time for Canada to be thinking about hosting another mega event, whether it's a Winter Olympics or something else? It already has FIFA coming in 2026 to Vancouver and Toronto.
Yeah, I think I would take this from two angles. First, from the Canadian perspective, Canadian sport is not fit for purpose. And as a result, if we don't have, or Canadians don't have their own act together in protecting athletes, ensuring athletes are safe, they should not be welcoming the world to our country or to Canada to show them how sport should be run. Because certainly Canada has got it wrong when it comes to protecting elite youth and children in this country when in safe sport and protection of their rights. So arguably they shouldn't. The other thing too is Canadians need to look at is, why would anyone want to support and attach their name to the International Olympic Committee based on the way they're driving their reckless human rights records in terms of what they're doing in Russia and Belarus and allowing them to compete, how they're treating athletes and never compensating and treating them as second-class citizens? The Olympic movement needs a correction. And any government across the world, I think if you're going to host the Olympics, you have to host it for one reason. And that is to be an agent of change, to change the movement and have conditions we want to grow the Olympic movement for the strength of sport globally is crucial. So no, I don't think the Canadian government should be supporting a bid for the Olympics. I don't think they're fit for purpose to hold any international event right now. You just have to look at the FIFA World Cup.
Vic Montaliani, the vice president of FIFA, also head of CONCACAF, who lives in West Vancouver. And there's Peter Montopoli, who was general secretary of the Canadian Soccer Association at the time when Bob Berarda was committing sex crimes against players. Well, two key people in this equation, Peter Montopoli heading up the Canadian office for 2026, and Vic Montaliani, one of the vice presidents of FIFA, one of the most powerful soccer executives in the world, living right here, and two very influential people, they're involved in this. And Bob Berarda, they knew what he was doing back then, and they haven't been transparent about what they knew and when they knew it.
They were involved, and it's been exposed that they're involved, but yet they're still leading sport in this country and leading soccer internationally. So if that doesn't tell you something's broken, I'm not sure what does. And that's systemic across all Canadian sport when we look at what's happening, where it's always easy to go after athletes. So for doping, we suspend them. For safe sport allegations, we give them a report and make them go away. But the enablers, the abusers, are never held to account. And the simple reason is the power imbalance. Athletes have no legal support, they have no money, and they can barely get by, let alone fight in court or fight and have representation. Sport, on the other hand, has all the resources and protects themselves and their brands for one thing, for these abuse allegations to go away and for them to keep moving forward. There's a reason that we have seen in three sports in Canada, class action lawsuits. So you have gymnastics athletes that have filed a class action lawsuit against Gymnastics Canada. Artistic swimming athletes have filed a class action against Artistic Swimming Canada. The water polo, four water polo athletes have filed a lawsuit against Water Polo Canada. Sport is not able to self-regulate. They cannot bring these abuses to the forefront, and they have not been able to address it appropriately. As a result, athletes had to take legal action. That speaks volumes. Athletes are taking legal actions against their sport for their failure. And it proves that sport cannot self-regulate. This OSIC that's managing it is a quasi-sport organization. We need to take all abuse issues out of sport. This is not a sport issue. This is a human rights crisis happening in sport. So we need judicial authority. We need human rights experts managing safe sport in Canada, not sport organizations and sport entities who are so insular and have so many inherent conflicts of interest that they never want to expose the truth. So we need to remove it and go in a totally different direction. And until that's done, and that may be prejudging a judicial inquiry, but I think that's what you'd see coming out of it.
I mean, athletes are also clients of our public health care system, a public health care system that Canadians are very proud about, and many Canadians are very disappointed that it has fallen into disrepair like this. Here in British Columbia, there was about 900,000 adults who don't have a family doctor. They don't have a doctor they can go to on a regular basis. And probably among those are athletes too, who are also facing large bills through for everything else in this economy affected by high inflation, high interest rates. But the healthcare system also is something which athletes need to excel, like every Canadian of every walk of life. What do you think about that? Is that another reason why Canada should delay any ambitions to host another Olympics or any other mega event to get that healthcare system working? Because the healthier Canadians are, the better they can play, train, and compete.
Well, arguably, you know, the way sports being run in Canada, and we talk about mental health and abuse of athletes, that's putting a strain on the system as well. I mean, athletes leave sport with no direction, nowhere to go. A lot of them face inhumane conditions when it comes to abuse, and are cast aside and have nowhere to turn. And they're left with the public system that, as you said, is overburdened when it comes to mental health issues, when it comes to physical issues. So we have a crisis here, and we continue to promote and support sport as a mechanism to raise healthy, well, strong, well-balanced individuals in Canada. But sport in Canada is not doing that right now. Sport in Canada has created this toxic culture environment, winning at all costs, from a young child to an elite athlete. And I think that's part of a judicial inquiry as well, is maybe what do we want at a sport? So let's correct this abuse problem, and let's redefine what sport means to this country and how it contributes to healthier people, healthier individuals. What's the objective? Is it gold medals? Or is it healthier, stronger, more robust society? Those are questions that need to be asked. And I know I would answer that question very clearly. Sports should be about, you know, it should be the Norwegian model, where the Norwegian model is about sport, is about play, going out and play, keeping people active. And if there are superior athletes that break through the system, they're going to do it no matter what. They're not going to do it because they're being forced and pushed and abused. They're going to do it because they're healthier, they're stronger, and they're more motivated. And I think that's the correction we need to look at. And it's a holistic view when it comes to the healthcare system, and it's a holistic view when it comes to sport in Canada.
That was my guest, Rob Kohler, Director General of Global Athlete. Go to globalathlete.org for more information. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Huawei announces closure of service centers in Taipei and Taichung. Chinese companies' presence in Taiwan continues to shrink, with storefronts set to close March 12th. Since 2020, the company's distribution capacity in Taiwan has been severely limited. This was due primarily to Huawei factories labeling products bound for Taiwan with the designation Taiwan, China. The company refused to comply with the regulations outlined by Taiwan's National Communications Commission to address this issue. Huawei's products were subsequently banned from major distribution channels in the country. In Kyoto news, Japan aiming for a record number of foreign visitors in 2025. The ambitious goals come as the government expects a recovery in demand for international air travel and for upcoming international events to be held in Japan, such as the Expo 2025 in Osaka, to boost visitor numbers. In 2019, prior to the outbreak of the global coronavirus pandemic, a record 31.88 million tourists visited Japan. But the number fell sharply following the outbreak of COVID-19, totaling only 4.12 million in 2020 and just 250,000 in 2021. In the Straits Times, kitten ruse cost woman $770,000 in Hong Kong crypto scam. Nearly 1,900 scams involving cryptocurrency were reported to Hong Kong police in the first 10 months of last year, a major increase on the 494 in the whole of 2020, police told AFP. The losses from those scams also skyrocketed to $220 million. In one recent case, a 58-year-old woman fell victim to an elaborate con that began with an online acquaintance promising a kitten as a gift. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.news podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, criminal investigation opened into Oregon bourbon scandal. The Oregon Department of Justice will open a criminal investigation into the diversion of Kentucky bourbon by Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission officials for their own personal use. The announcement comes 2 days after the Oregonian revealed that six liquor agency managers, including Executive Director Steve Marks, had diverted scarce bottles of bourbon for their own use or to give as gifts. In King 5, Sonics legend Sean Kemp opens his second cannabis shop in Seattle. Kemp's new dispensary is in a former bank building near Starbucks Center and offers a wide variety of cannabis products in a Seattle-themed 3,500-square-foot showroom. A massive mural features Kemp, former Sonic teammate Gary Payton, and Bruce Lee next to Jimi Hendrix. In Czech news, hungry UVic students turn to dumpster diving and food banks. The Student Society at the University of Victoria says at least 150 students are accessing the school's food bank on the days they operate. Nearly two-thirds of UVic students are facing some level of food insecurity right now. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to caring people across BC who commit random acts of kindness. It's Real Acts of Caring Week in BC from February 12th to 18th. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Domi bracia, cosas corona.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 12th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 12th of February in 2010, the 21st Winter Olympics opened in Vancouver? But tragedy on opening day. 21-year-old Georgian luger Nodar Kumaratishvili crashed on the Whistler Sliding Center and later died. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews.
Until next week.